nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome. I'm here today with Courtney DeRondi from TDT CPAs and Advisors. Courtney, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Travis. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. I love bringing in special missions people like yourself, special projects like in the military, because you do something specific and down to the point. You're not a nonprofit. You are a business, but really you're a business because you have special skills in the CPA and advisory world. Tell us a little bit about what you do with TDT CPAs and Advisors.
Yeah, so TDT is a boutique accounting and advisory firm. So our focus is on helping successful leaders of small businesses and nonprofit organizations to really understand how they can use financial information to leverage their mission and their business to grow and scale. So my role at TDT, I am the managing partner, but I've been with the firm for my whole career. So most of my career was spent serving clients, primarily nonprofits, as well as small business owners. But now my primary role is, rather than serving clients, I get to, one, lead our firm as our CEO, managing partner, but two, I'm responsible for our business development efforts. So I get to talk to prospective clients and existing clients about what issues they're facing and how we might be able to help, and then match them up with the best team members within our firm to help them.
You see, I like that, because most people just match someone up with the next person available. And if you don't do that, that is wonderful news. I can't tell you how many times I've been stuck in a position just because it was the next available slot, but it had nothing to do with my talent, skills, or abilities. And it wasn't a good match. And there's nothing like just putting someone in the next open slot. It has no real purpose or value other than you needed a body. Then why do you have them on staff in the first place? So we're going to get into a couple of things today. We're going to talk about reasons nonprofits will fail in 2021. We're going to talk about what successful nonprofits are doing that unsuccessful nonprofits are not doing. We're going to talk about how nonprofits can end up owing taxes, even though they're a nonprofit organization. We're going to cover five blind spots that come up when running your organization, and at what level are you going to have audits that are required when you start getting above certain giving levels. So that's a lot to cover in one episode, Courtney. Are you up for it?
I'm up for it. Yeah, we can see where it goes. I'm glad to talk about any or all of those topics.
I tell you what, those of you that are not watching the video right now, Courtney's got the blinds open behind her firm. She's in like Des Moines, Iowa, and there's snow on the roof of the building behind her, which I just think is great. I grew up in northern Minnesota, and that's the one thing I miss about the holidays is the snow. I don't mind not working in the snow, but holiday time, you want to see snow. I don't think this is going to come out till like June. So this is like February 1st when we're recording this. All you guys listening when it comes out, what do you mean snow? You guys crazy snow? Courtney, tell us, what are the three reasons that nonprofits are going to fail in 2021?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that you want to get out ahead of in order to avoid failure is to know the profitability of your programs. As a nonprofit organization, you have your mission, and then you have certain programs that support that mission. Some of those programs yield you profit, so you make more revenue than you have to expend, and that creates some margin that you can use to subsidize other programs that aren't as profitable. But you have to know which programs are making you money and which ones are costing you, so that you can decide first the ones that are costing you, do they really align with your mission? And if they do, that's great. That doesn't mean you have to stop performing that program, but it does mean you have to be really intentional about making sure it's sustainable by having other programs that are profitable to subsidize it, or other grants or donations to subsidize it. So I think that the challenge is when there's so much going on in the world and so much change, we can chase after all these different good things without being mindful of which programs are providing the funding that we need to be sustainable in this organization and align with our mission.
Yeah, I think that's important to at least understand and be aware of. I talk to a lot of veteran nonprofits that want to take care of vets, and almost all of them are convinced that they cannot charge for the programs that they're delivering, which is absolutely flat out ridiculous. There are membership based nonprofits all over there. Even if they pay 10 bucks to be a part of what's going on, I got to interview Operation Phantom Support CEO Nick Valentine, and they provide meals to the community. In order to receive a meal, you got to give 20 bucks a month. Why that's so great is the guy in front of you in line and the family behind you in line, you're all supporting each other by paying 20 bucks a month to help feed everyone in the community. There's nothing wrong at all with charging for a program or charging to be a member of a group that's providing a program. So I think that's important to highlight. So that's definitely one of the reasons nonprofits might fail if not paying attention to in 2021. What's another reason?
Another one is not projecting their cash flows. So sometimes you'll be focused on how much money do we have right now? What is the bank account balance? And what we really need to be looking at is where do I expect my bank account balance to be going up or down? So looking at where are you at today? How much cash do you have that is available to use for operations? So if you've, you know, if you've already started an endowment and you have some funds that can be distributed from that, if you have an operating reserve, or if you just have one, you know, plain old checking account, know what you're starting with. And then look out over the next several weeks. We suggest if you have a lot of volatility, look at it on a week by week basis over, say, 12 to 16 weeks. If things are pretty stable or certain, you can look at it monthly. But you're looking at what are the cash inflows I expect to come in week by week or month by month? When are these grants going to be received? If people have made pledges or promises to give, when are those going to come in? If you do provide any fee for service or products for fees, you know, what's the timing of those collections? And then what's your outflow? What weeks do you pay any kind of payroll or contract labor? What weeks do you have to pay for insurance or rent? And then what's the projected cash balance? You have to look at that as a tool to see where do I think I'm going to be either low on cash or negative on cash. So this is a tool, not just to know where you're at today, but to look out and see where there might be issues or challenges on the horizon, because that's just a symptom of some other underlying issue that you've got to deal with.
Yeah, I know we've said on the show many times that nonprofit is a tax status, not a business plan. And what you're talking about is legitimate business things. Like, where's my money going to be? Where's my cash flow at? When am I expecting new things? And if you're a nonprofit listening to this right now, and you're like, what do you mean? You guys are supposed to have money that you've planned on. Time to start pumping up those monthly recurring donations. Give them a free t-shirt in exchange for 20 bucks a month. Get people on board with you. It's not enough for them to give one time. They need to be in your monthly recurring donor pool so you can actually plan out your year. What's reason number three nonprofits are going to fail here in 2021?
So I think reason number three is that they don't have accurate, timely financial information to tell where they're going and to be a basis for predicting where they're headed. So I think a lot of times organizations are so busy focusing on the mission and the work that the finances are something that somebody else worries about at some other point in the year. And it's really crucial to have systems in place where you can be tracking all the transactions that are happening in your organization and reporting on them and having that visibility. Again, this is not just looking at how much money do we have in the bank. It's really getting an understanding of how are our programs performing? What is the amount of reserves that we have? Are we building any reserves? Are we consistently diminishing our reserves? You know, where are we at? And then once you've got that under control, you can use that to propel all kinds of forecasts and projections and budgets to be able to predict and track where you're headed. But if you don't have that foundational, accurate, timely, historical financial information, you're not going to be able to have any basis for any planning or forecasting.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a call this weekend from a nonprofit in need. They said they're behind by about $7,500. And I said, "What's up, brother? Why didn't you call me, you know, months ago?" Well, it turns out as soon as COVID hit, all his normal means of fundraising were shut off. And instead of pivoting, trying something new, reaching out, he just held on to try to weather the storm, hoping that COVID restrictions would be lifted. And he waited 10 months to reach out for help or advice. That's not recommended. That's not recommended for a lot of things, because I know he was struggling and I know a lot of nonprofits were struggling, but I also talked to a whole group of nonprofits that 2020 was the record-breaking year of donations, because just because something like COVID happens doesn't mean your mission stops, doesn't mean there's no longer people in need, doesn't mean that everyone has lost their job, because there was millions of people making more money than they've ever made. Don't be scared to reach out to myself, to Courtney, or to someone else in your network when times are tough. Times are tough. They happen. They happen on a regular basis, a couple times a year. Don't go it alone. Reach out to someone like Courtney at TDCCP as an advisors for that help, that guidance. If finances aren't in your zone of genius, call someone who specializes in them. Do you believe that nonprofits or businesses should start with a CPA on their team?
Definitely. I think they, and this doesn't mean you have to hire somebody on staff as a CFO, you know, or a controller, but you need to be working with a CPA who can function as an advisor to you. Someone who understands the nuances and complexities of operating and reporting on and accounting for nonprofit activities. A lot of times we work with nonprofits when they kind of reach this point where they know they need a CPA. It's very clear, like, I need an audit. And that's the first that, you know, they'll approach us. And oftentimes what we find out is that they haven't been accounting for transactions appropriately throughout, say, the first, you know, 3 years or 5 years or whatever time that they've existed up until this point. An audit at that point is really painful and really expensive, because we have to go back through and dig through all of this information, not to mention the fact that they just haven't been upholding their fiduciary responsibility to honor, primarily this issue comes up around donor restrictions. So people give money for specific restricted purposes. You have an obligation to account for those restrictions and release the restriction when you've spent it accordingly. And if you're kind of willy-nilly, you know, collecting donations and spending money, but not matching those two up, you can have a big mess. And then you end up with these resources that you've accumulated, and there's some uncertainty about how much of this is unrestricted and available for us to use however we need, and how much of it do we actually have obligations that we still need to fulfill. That's a big part of nonprofit financial reporting, is being able to show your users of your statements, what resources do you have available for unrestricted purposes and restricted purposes? And if you haven't been accounting for that as you go, it can be a real problem. So the earlier you can get somebody involved who understands that, the better.
I'm with you. I've been part of an organization that let the audits lapse for a few years, and they're like, "Oh, we should get grants. Grants are a good idea." And you bring the CPA team on to help get everything in order, line it up to do the audit to qualify for grants, and realize that they had months upon months of work to do to get everything organized, to get it in order, to qualify for these grants. Audits have a couple like dispositions. I can't remember what are the names of like the dispositions of audits. Like, you've completed the audit with something. What's it called?
Yeah. Well, so we do audits of financial statements, and then there's also audits of compliance. So if you have a certain, if you pass a certain threshold of federal awards that you expended, so currently it's $750,000 of federal awards expended. If you've done that within your fiscal year, you're required to have what's called a single audit or an audit under uniform guidance. So when we talk about an audit of financial statements, what that means is that as the auditor, the CPA, is obtaining an understanding of your organization and the processes and controls that you have in place, the nature of your financials, so that we can assess the risk that something's gone wrong that could lead your financials to be materially misstated. And we design procedures based on that risk to be able to test your transactions and balances so we can provide an opinion. So the users of the financials will know that based on risk and procedures, the opinion is, hopefully, if it's a clean, unqualified opinion, that these financials are fairly stated. That's what an audit is.
The qualified opinion or the qualified opinion. Qualified is actually the bad one, right? That means there's problems.
Yeah. So qualified would mean everything is okay except this. Adverse would mean we just like, this is such a mess, we can't even tell you. Like, so an adverse opinion means like either our scope was limited, like we didn't have the information that we needed, or the testing provided such, you know, uncertain results that we can't provide an opinion. So yeah, there's unqualified, qualified, and adverse. So that's on the financials. And then that uniform guidance that I mentioned, that's so on top of auditing the financial statements and the footnote disclosures, uniform guidance is requiring the auditor to audit the organization's compliance with certain requirements of the grant funds. So there's all these different requirements attached to getting federal money, and an auditor has to test whether or not the organization complied with those requirements. And again, there can be, you know, unqualified, qualified, or adverse opinions around that.
I have never in my life been so excited to be unqualified at something. It was
fantastic. Yeah, it seems kind of backwards, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I don't know why. That's why you need a CPA, just because you can't understand the lingo. That's why you get the specialist brought in here. So what are some successful nonprofits? What are they doing that unsuccessful nonprofits are not doing? What's the gap? What are people missing?
Yeah, I think having systems in place to account for transactions at a more detailed level. So what, you know, what grant is this expense associated with? What restriction does this donation have? And putting the resources around having people in place, either internal employees or outsourced accounting firm, to record those transactions properly so that you can really tell what is going on with those organizations. Because back to the beginning when I mentioned program profitability, you can't measure your program profitability if you're not entering transactions with those kinds of classifications and tags attached to them. I mean, not without a lot of additional, like you said, not without spending weeks digging back through all the details. So organizations who are doing this well have really optimize their process around cash receipts and cash disbursements and payroll to be able to record transactions at the appropriate level of detail. Their chart of accounts is, you know, robust enough that they are accounting for these different grants, but they don't have, you know, tons of minutia that's not important. So they're being able to record transactions accurately and timely so they can report back out and use that information to see how they're doing and to evaluate where they're going.
Now, if you're listening to this and you just heard that last little diatribe by Courtney, you might have got hung up on some of the techno babble because you're not familiar with how accounting works. You have money that comes in and might be qualified as, and you can only use it for this stuff. And you have to be able to have separate pots of money based on whatever the rules are attached to this money coming in. And you have to account for it properly when it comes in, when it goes out, and what it's used for. Does that about sum it up, Courtney? Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly. And those are restrictions. This is something that I think is also another issue that sometimes we find, especially with nonprofits that are newer and still trying to figure these things out, is that only a donor can restrict the use of the funds. If your board or you as the executive director have made a decision to designate funding that you got for a specific purpose, you can undesignate it, but you cannot unrestrict money that a donor put a restriction on. So a lot of times, especially nonprofit boards, will get confused about whether resources that they have are designated or restricted, and what that means for how can we use these funds. So restrictions are put in place by donors and you can't undo them without going back to the donor to get permission. Designations are internal and can be lifted with, you know, a board vote or, you know, depends on your bylaws, things like that. So knowing the difference and accounting for that properly, you know, showing on your financial statements, okay, this is the money we have. We've designated it for this purpose. That's different than this money has been given to us and is restricted for this purpose.
Yeah. For you out there listening, if someone comes to you as a donor and offers you money with restrictions, you can decline their donation. Talk to your board, make sure it aligns with your mission, vision, and goals. And if it doesn't, if the restrictions are too heavy or you're not going to be able to really use the money to really help benefit you, say no to the money. That's okay. You don't have to say yes to every dollar that comes in, to every restriction that's applied. You don't have to. If you're hurting that much for money, you need to work on your fundraising and your donor relations and all these other areas, maybe charging for programs. That's perfectly okay. But to have some donor come in and try to dictate every little detail of your life, you can say yes and take that and take on those restrictions. Or you can say no, thank you. And there's nothing wrong with that either. Have you ever, you know, come across a situation where nonprofits actually owe taxes? And what does that situation look like?
Yeah. Yes. So there are some instances where a nonprofit will owe taxes. It's called unrelated business income. So if you are carrying out activities that are not related to your mission or have some kind of profit motivated focus, like you're selling advertising or something like that, there can be situations where you have created a taxable event. You can also, probably the most common thing we see where people run into issues is inadvertently they have let their exempt status lapse because they're not properly reporting their activities to the IRS. And so if you don't file the appropriate tax forms on an annual basis, after a few years, your status will be pulled. Your tax exempt status will be pulled. And then all of a sudden you are subject to tax. And normally we've helped organizations with this. Normally you can go back and apply for reinstatement, but it is a painful, costly experience. You know, you have to file all these reports and gather all this information. And so, you know, that can be, you know, not just by performing activities that really don't align with your mission, you can also end up with everything, even if it aligned with your mission, being taxable if you're not careful about your, protecting your exempt status.
I got you. You know, I was reading, I try to keep up on nonprofit news, and I have a collection of smart people that I follow. And I was reading Dr. William Clark, and he was talking about, yeah, you have this great space. You're a dance troupe. You have an auditorium, and you're like, you know what? We could make some money if we rent out this auditorium and charge, you know, movie tickets. What a great way to get money coming in. And then, oh, by the way, that is not aligned with your mission. And now you're going to be charged taxes based on the money brought in from this avenue. So definitely something to watch out for. I mean, you've already qualified why on earth you should have a CPA, because most people get into this thing with a big heart and they're not really nonprofit savvy or business savvy, but the nonprofit savvy is they're not up to speed on compliance and understanding the details and the inner workings of what it takes to make sure to keep the IRS happy. The IRS is a great organization when you follow the rules. And I have found more often than not that you call them up, and you give them a little sweet words and be like, oh, how are you doing today? I'm so excited. I have some questions for you. I want to make sure that we're on the same team on this. How do I take care of this problem? And I tell you what, they'd much rather help you stay out of problems than come after you when you're not in compliance. So definitely use them as a same team member and make sure you are up to speed with that. So you've been doing volunteer work on the side your whole professional life. Tell us a little bit about that, Courtney.
In my career, I've volunteered with lots of different organizations. As a CPA, they often want me to be the treasurer, which I sometimes have served in that capacity. But I think what it has given me is a whole other perspective on, you know, the board and governance level, So as an accountant or an auditor or a CPA serving nonprofits, we have certain roles and responsibilities. And then as a volunteer board member, you have a whole nother set of responsibilities. And so I think it's been a really good way for me to kind of see the other side of the coin. Same thing for me in leading our business, our firm, and being an owner in our firm. I see the small business ownership side as well. Volunteering on a board has given me a whole other perspective, kind of sitting in the shoes of a lot of the clients that I normally am serving or reporting to.
So you get the kind of the behind the scenes look, and you understand where nonprofits are coming from when they show you different things. It's not like, I kind of feel like this could be an area of shame for startup nonprofits. Look, it's okay to not know what you're doing. That's why you're reaching out to someone like Courtney, because you need help, because you just didn't know. It's not likely that you knew the right thing to do and you're like, I'm just going to create a big mess for Courtney to come in and fix, which I'm sure she would for the right price. But it's okay to not understand all the things you need to do. It's not okay to know that you don't know and then not seek help and not seek guidance and not seek professional. Are you going to pay for it? Yeah. Is it worth the money? You betcha. If you want to keep your nonprofit compliant, it's definitely worth it. We have been covering a lot of stuff already, Courtney.
Yeah, we are. We're just clipping right along.
You are. I mean, if this isn't an ad for your business, I don't know what the heck is. You also wanted to talk about the 5 blind spots you're going to encounter when running an organization while you're trying to grow. What are those 5 blind spots? What's number one?
Yeah. So the first one is that you have really reached the end of your limits and you know there's got to be a different way. As your organization grows and scales, the way you approach kind of getting to this point is going to stop working. If the way you got here was by kind of figuring things out and doing a lot of it yourself, that's very common for startup businesses, for startup nonprofits. There's maybe one person doing everything, right? You're delivering programs, you're raising money, you're recording in QuickBooks, you're taking money to the bank, you're doing it all. And as you grow and scale, there will be a point where it no longer makes sense. You're not serving the organization well by continuing to wear all of those hats. You have to really start focusing on how you as the leader best contribute to the organization. And then through outsourcing or other employees, find other people to take on other aspects of the organization.
Yeah, you can't only be the janitor and the CEO for so long before you're wore out, stressed to the max, and just don't have time for the things that you need to have time for. I always look for not someone that I am similar to, but someone that is strong in an area that I'm either weak in or that I really don't want to do, like this podcast. I am not interested in learning how to do the production. That's not my jam. That's not my zone of genius. I'm not interested in spending time there. So I have a production team that takes care of all the whiz bang stuff behind the scenes, and we get this great product because I know where I need to focus my time at, and it's not there. What's thing number two, Courtney?
Yeah. So can I go back to one thing on number one first? Just, I want to give like a really practical, like if this is your issue, here's where I think you could start. So if this is your issue, start by listing out all the things that you do in the organization and then put them in buckets of which things are really best done by you. It makes sense because of your capabilities and your capacity. And for those other things that really need to be delegated to someone else, start listing out the roles and the responsibilities so that they can be delegated to other people. So kind of take a look at everything you're doing, put it into buckets of things that you should be doing and things that somebody else should do and other things somebody else should do. Get enough information that you could create kind of the basics of, the description of the role, the responsibilities, so you can find, who do I need to do this? Do I need an outsourced accounting firm like TDT? Do I need to hire somebody internally? Do I need someone to manage my website? Whatever it is. So that's just some practical things of how to start if that is an issue that you're facing.
Yeah. And if you're not sure what this looks like to create the process, go back and listen to my interview with Greg Brooks from Rocket Station. For $20, they will figure out what it is you do and create the system to allow you to hand it off to someone else. Do they offer a service at $10 a month to have a virtual assistant do it for you? They do. But without hiring them, you can still have them evaluate the process that you're wanting to hand off to a subordinate, a volunteer, or an employee for $20. So why wouldn't you?
Yeah, awesome. That's a great example of how to take action on this. Okay, you ready for number two?
I'm ready for number two.
Number two. Okay, so your gut feeling for what's happening is no longer accurate. So...
Whoa. Who did that just slap in the face? That one.
Yeah, this is something that can start to surprise people. And, you know, the thing about these blind spots is that you've been working so hard to grow your organization, to scale it to the next level. And all of a sudden, that growth and scale you work so hard to achieve creates new problems that you didn't expect. And it can feel like maybe I'm doing something wrong. The point of calling it a blind spot is that it exists. It's there. You just don't see it. And being aware of it can help you to deal with it and eliminate the issue before it, you know, crashes into you. So these are so common. That's why we can write about them. We have an ebook that goes through all five of these blind spots. That's why we can talk about them, write about them. It's because in serving clients, our firm has served nonprofits and small businesses for over 45 years, these things consistently come up. So don't feel bad if that one just smacked you in the face. It's a real thing. When you are doing everything yourself or most everything yourself, you can keep it all in your head, right? It's like, oh, I know what to expect in the financials. I know what to expect in these outcomes because I was directly involved with all of it. But as you grow and scale, you have to get more people involved and you can lose touch with what's actually happening in the financials. But a lot of times people think the financials must be wrong. Like that can't be right. And that, because sometimes that's true. Maybe there's adjustments that are needed and there's something wrong with the financials. But most often the financials are correct. You just are not able to keep all the details in your head anymore because you're not involved with everything. So that's not a bad thing. It just means that you're going to have systems in place to accurately report those transactions and that you're looking at that information and using it to see how you're doing, not just what you think in your head or your gut.
I tell you, I am a person that thrives on feedback. I'm going to go with my best, maybe gut feeling, but I know without a doubt, there's things that I miss. Like, hey, Travis, did you mean to say it like that? Because it sounded like you took out a 2x4 and smacked him across the face. Ugh, that's probably not how I meant to sound or come across, right? There's things that happen all the time. People have bad days. People just are unaware of the things that they're just not familiar with. So me as a person, I love quality feedback so I can do it better next time.
Yeah, I think if this is something that you feel might be resonating with you, at least in regard to finance, in the financial area of your business or your organization, think about, like, do I really know the profitability of each program? Do I really know how much we have in reserves? Do I really know how much of our resources are restricted or designated? Do I know what we're spending on the overhead areas of our organization? That's the kind of information that you can't just rely on what you think it is, because as you grow and scale, more things flow into those financials that you might not be thinking about and keeping in mind. So having the ability to report on each of those things and really dig into those details is crucial as you grow and scale when you just can't keep it all in your head anymore.
Perfect. What's reason number three?
Okay. So number three, you're spending a lot of time putting out fires instead of preventing them.
Ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and it's a lot cheaper.
Yes, that is definitely true. I think, you know, we can find ourselves spending so much time putting out fires that we lose sight of whether we're fixing symptoms or underlying causes. And so what you need to do, if this is your issue, is start thinking about the raging fires in your organization. There's usually something, if not multiple things, that are taking a lot of your time and attention, and maybe over and over and over again. Think about what areas of your organization do those revolve around, and then dig deeper. So we want to look upstream, like what happened before this problem occurred. So we talked early in the segment, I think, about cash flow, that cash flow is just a symptom of another problem. And so that's why it's important to project it out. So if you think about that example, cash flow might be the fire that's raging, but there are underlying reasons for your cash flow problem. And you have to dig deeper into what is happening in the organization. What are my people doing? What activities are going on? And start measuring and monitoring those activities, not just measuring. So a common problem with cash flow might be late payment on receivables. So maybe your grants are all reimbursement based and you have a hard time collecting those grant monies on time. So it's causing a cash flow problem. We need to look into, why aren't they paying? Are they rejecting a bunch of costs that you submitted? What did they know about those items to reject them that you didn't know when you submitted the request? Or are you not getting them issued properly? You know, what is the underlying problem, not just focusing on the raging fire in front of you?
Yeah, when I look at something like putting out a lot of fires, I look back to three things. One is people. Do I have the right people in the right job? Right? Do I have this whiz-bang world-class fundraiser, but I'm bogging down 8 out of his 10 hours at work doing inputting people into a CRM? Am I wasting his talents by having him do something that's not part of his zone of genius? Number two is policies. We talked to Debbie Corge, look back on that, about all the policies and procedures you need. A well-written policy or procedure is going to save you time. It's going to answer employee questions, and it's going to be able to put out all these fires before they happen, because the employee has the information they need to be successful, and they already have your decision on some of these questions that are going to come up. And the last is systems. If you onboarded a new donor who wants to be monthly recurring at $1,000 a month, have you done the things to get them on board properly? Have you thanked them? I think Patrick Kirby, who's also been a guest of mine, 7 times before you ask for more money. His kind of rule of thumb is, if you don't know the name of their dog, you can't ask them for more money. Do you have the systems in place, whether it's CRM, whether it's delivering programs, or, you know, getting all the numbers in order for all your financials? Are those systems in place? Are they running properly? If you're having a problem with people, policies, or systems, you're going to spend a ton of your time putting out fires because you don't have any structure in place. And especially where you're growing, if you're going from a one-man show to creating an organization, those things are going to happen. Don't forget to get the systems in place, the policies, procedures in place, and the right people in place. And sometimes that person is going to be outgrown by the organization and they need a new role in order to still be successful in your organization.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Travis. Those are all great ideas.
What's number four?
So number four, this one on the surface doesn't seem like a problem. You're going to be surprised by it. So you have more cash than you're used to, and you don't want to waste it. So
Yes. I was just thinking about this, because so many, especially startup nonprofits, they find themselves with an influx of cash, and their first thought is, I'm going to serve more people. It's almost always their first thought. And it's not a bad first thought, but that's not always the best place for your money to go. But I'm sure you have more thoughts on this.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, normally we think more money isn't a problem, right? But it can be, because a few reasons. I mean, one is, when you have the comfort of excess resources, you can kind of let other costs creep in, or inefficient processes. It can kind of cover up a lot of issues that are really bubbling underneath the surface. The other thing is, you can, like you said, focus on perpetuating the mission and not take the opportunity to be intentional about building reserves. This is where, if this is a blind spot for you, when you're doing your budget, you need to think not just about, how am I going to, you know, spend the resources that I have, but where do I also want to build some intentional reserves? How much cash do I want to have on hand for operations? Do I want to start building maybe a board designated endowment fund? Do I need to build some reserves for property repairs or replacements. If you have a lot of, you know, physical assets and facilities in your organization, there's lots of different reserves that you can budget for. And sometimes, you know, when things are tight, the budget is really only to figure out like what can we spend, but the budget can also be used for where can we save and start building up some reserves as well. Because, you know, just in this, in 2020 with COVID, the organizations that had sufficient reserves to get them through some shutdowns or some changes in donor giving patterns, those are the organizations that were able to continue to survive. And then a lot of them were looking at, okay, now what do we need to do to make sure we can rebuild the reserves that we just had to utilize? So this is an important component of budgeting, is to factor in how you want to build the appropriate reserves within your organization.
Yeah. And this can really be something to put forth to your board. And the question can look like, if we get a windfall, if we get far above projections, what's our spending priority? Are we looking at hiring a staff member? Are we looking at creating a fund like you managed? All the best organizations have a fund where they use the interest accrued every year as part of their budget instead of using the principal, which is fantastic. Maybe you're looking to upgrade your property or buy a vehicle. But if you haven't thought about these things ahead of time, the tendency is to default to, I want to serve more people. You do, but what's the best way to do that? Maybe the best way to do that isn't delivering programs directly. Maybe it's by creating process procedures. Maybe it's buying a new piece of software. Maybe it's by creating this reserve to take you through the lean times, because they happen to everybody in every organization. I love that. More money can definitely mean more problems. What do we got for blind spot number five, Courtney? We're going to wrap this thing up.
All right. So the last one is, you have a vision for your future, but you're not sure if it pencils out. So a lot of organizations are good at thinking through their vision and their strategic plan, and then they take action. There's one step that I would like you to insert in there before you take action, and that is to pencil things out. Even if it's just a simple Excel file, it doesn't have to be some fancy financial model. Do the math on what you're planning and see if it really pencils out, because otherwise you can end up with some strategies that don't actually get you where you're trying to go. So take some time to pencil out your strategies and your goals, which is going to mean your goals are going to have to be more specific and measurable about, you know, so if you want to say, you know, we want to double the amount of donations from corporate donors next year. Okay. How are we going to do that? And what will it take for us to make that happen? Pencil it out. Like, what would that make possible? And what is that going to require of us from a financial perspective? If we take our eye off of this other area and put it on that, something else going to go down? You know, be realistic and actually pencil out what you expect to happen, and then evaluate your assumptions that you used and make sure that this really is a course of action that will get you where you're trying to go.
Yeah, we're going to double our corporate donations. Cool. Who on your team are you taking off of what they're working on to put on this? Because the one person doing corporate donations, sponsorships, partnerships right now, do they have double the amount of time to make double the phone calls and double the connections and double the lunches and double the coffees and double the... Probably not. If you're a one-person show, you definitely don't have the time. So it's opportunity cost. Something else is going to suffer while you're focusing your energy on this thing. Now, are you handing this off to a VA? Are you handing it off to a volunteer? Is that volunteer steadfast, trustworthy, going to stay on for the long haul? Is this someone in transition? What are you looking at? Are you evaluating your staff to see where this energy is going to come from? And if you are shifting the focus over here, what else are you saying no to? Is there a program you're doing that you have to shut down because you can no longer do it? Looking back at those program costs and see what is actually being profitable. Is this going to be that you're going to stop writing grants and you're going to pull your grant writing over to do this thing? What are you saying no to in order to say yes to this? That's a great question.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think another scenario we've seen where this has been helpful, this financial modeling or penciling things out, is we had a client we helped a couple months ago who had burned through a lot of their reserves because they had to be closed. And so the board decided they were going to do a capital campaign to raise some money to replenish the reserve. And so we help them look back historically and project out to the future. What do we think we really need so that we don't have to go back every year and do this again? You know, taking more data and penciling things out to give them some what-if scenarios so that they could decide what was the best course of action. What should our fundraising goal even be in light of the circumstances that we have? So penciling it out can avoid some missteps or some lack of traction. It can really help you make sure that the goal you're setting is the right goal in the first place.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And we cover a lot of stuff today, Courtney. I mean, we covered reasons nonprofits are going to fail in 2021. We covered what successful nonprofits are doing that unsuccessful nonprofits are not doing. We covered the fact that nonprofits can end up owing taxes either by doing something that doesn't meet their mission or by letting their nonprofit status lapse. We covered that nonprofits and businesses should definitely start with a CPA on our team because an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and maintaining something is a lot easier than fixing a gigantic mess. And we covered the 5 blind spots that we're going to run into, that you don't have time to scale, that your gut feeling can be wrong, that you're spending too much time putting out fires, more money, more problems. And if you don't do the math, you're going to find out that you're in a bad situation. Holy cow, Courtney, oozing with value today. Where can people find you and get a hold of you if they want more of this value for their organization?
Yeah, so they can go to tdtpc.com/MPA for Nonprofit Architect. So tdtpc.com/NPA. And so there they can book a call with me. If there's something that you want to ask me, or you're looking for an accounting firm that provides outsourced services, specializes in nonprofit organizations, or if you need an audit, you know, any of those services, I'm glad to talk with you to book a call and we can discover if there are ways we can help. Also on that same page, you'll be able to download a full copy of the ebook of the 5 blind spots of growing organizations as well.
Oh, fantastic, Courtney. Everything I wanted and more, and I guess. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thanks for having me, Travis.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.